So I'm Marina, and today I'm going to talk about this work, which is a joint work with Ila Ying, Andrea Di Biagio, Ellie Wolf, and Eric Cavalcanti. And this work is on extended Wigner's friend inequalities, are non-classical causal compatibility inequalities. This talk is going to work upside down in this title. So first I'm going to tell you what are causal compatibility inequalities and what is causal compatibility. Then I'm going to tell you how this framework can be used to understand Bell's theorem and how Bell's theorem actually poses a challenge to this framework that gives us the non-classical causal framework. And then finally, I'm going to tell you how this non-classical causal framework can be used to understand extended Wigner's friend inequalities. So if you've ever heard about the measurement problem or things like that, this is related to the Wigner's friend thought experiment. Okay, so I'm going to first start with causal inference. Causal inference is a framework that was started in machine learning, nothing to do with physics originally, but it's used to give causal explanations to the statistical data that we observe. So I'm going to give a very silly example. Suppose that in a city in the coast, you see that every time the ice cream sales go up, the number of sunburn hospitalizations also go up. Does it mean that ice cream should be banned because it causes sunburn? Well, of course it doesn't, because correlation does not imply causation. And in this very simple case, it's super easy to see what is the actual causal structure that explains my data. It's a common cause, like the heat, the temperature. So if it's too hot, people buy ice cream, people get sunburned. Okay, so in this case, we say that this variable H is a common cause. But I mentioned to you that I'm going to talk about causal compatibility inequalities or causal compatibility constraints in more generality. What does this mean? This means that this specific causal structure, it cannot explain every probability distribution that you observe. It can only explain a subset of the probability distributions. In this specific case, when you can measure what is the temperature, then sunburn hospitalizations and ice cream sales, they need to become independent, because now you know what is the common cause. So we're going to say that all of the probability distributions that can be explained by this causal structure have to obey this type of equation, that when you condition on a specific value of H, when you measure what is the temperature, then ice cream and sunburn factorize. All right, this type of equation now is a constraint on which probability distributions can be explained by this graph. And as we're going to see, we're going to talk more about these constraints when we talk about Bell's theorem. But before that, I'm just going to introduce one more thing in causal inference, which is latent variables. Sometimes you can have some variables that influence on the system that you are interested. So in this case, we're interested in the sunburn hospitalizations, and the sun protection awareness can influence on that. But maybe that's too hard to measure. Like, how do you measure the sun protection awareness of a certain population? So sometimes in a certain experiment, we don't measure certain variables for various reasons, but they do influence in our causal explanations. When this happens, we're going to call them latent variables. Just to abstract this a little bit, the notation that I'm going to use in the rest of the talk is the latent variables are going to be represented by these circles. The visible variables or observed variables are these triangles, which are the ones that I'm really interested in. And all of these structures, they are called DAGs, directed acyclic graphs. So I'll keep saying the term DAG, but it just means this kind of structure. All right, now this framework has a lot of applications to classical data analysis. And as I mentioned before, it was born in machine learning, nothing to do with physics. But now I'm going to tell you, what does physics bring into this framework, and what can we learn about Bell's theorem with this framework? All right, so maybe some of you still never seen it, so I'm going to introduce what is the Bell scenario. Suppose you have two parties, Alice and Bob, and they share some system. I'm not going to say what type of system they share. And then in one wing, Alice has a measurement choice X and a measurement outcome A. So the measurement choice X and measurement outcome A, they are just random variables, like numbers, like 0, 1, 2. And depending on which number Alice chooses, she's going to perform a different measurement on the system. Same thing with Bob, measurement choice Y, measurement outcome B. Now I'm going to put some constraints, like some causal constraints on the scenario, and let's see what we obtain. First thing is, suppose that this experiment is made in space-like separation. So the measurement that Alice makes and the measurement that Bob makes, they're made in space-like separation in such a way that now I'm going to assume that there is no causation outside of the light cone. And if there is no causation outside of the light cone, this means that Alice's measurement choice, X, cannot causally influence Bob's outcome, B. And I'm going to make a second assumption, which is Alice and Bob are free to choose their measurement settings, X and Y, independently of lambda. Now I put a lambda here, which is the hidden variable. Okay, now what is a causal modeling of this scenario under these assumptions? It's something like this. So here is a DAG, which I'm going to call Bell DAG. There is no arrow between X and B or Y and A because of the first causal assumption that I made. And X and Y, they don't have any parents in this DAG because of the second causal assumption. They are freely chosen. And in this specific case, lambda is a classical random variable because I'm still in the old framework that I was talking about that statisticians and people in machine learning use. All right. Now, what are the causal constraints that arise from this causal structure? Just like the causal constraints that I mentioned before, here, all of the distributions AB given XY that can be explained by this causal structure, they need to obey these constraints. The first two, they are just no signaling constraints. They just say that the value that Alice observed cannot statistically depend on the outcome of Bob and vice versa. So this is basically saying that we cannot send signals faster than light. The second type of constraint are Bell inequalities. And as it turns out, it is known that quantum mechanics and experiments violate these inequalities. Actually, those experiments are what got the Nobel Prize in 22. So what does this imply for this causal structure? This causal structure is not a good explanation for the experiments and for the quantum predictions. Okay, so then how do we causally explain what's going on in a Bell experiment? The first option is just change the causal structure. So we can add more arrows, for example. But all of those options, they have problems. First problem, they deny the causal assumptions that I started with. So for example, the first one has causation outside of the light cone, superluminal causation. Second one has superdeterminism. The third one has retrocausality, which is like causation back in time. And actually, all of these modifications that you could make, some of them are related to actual interpretations of quantum mechanics that are out there. For example, Bohmian mechanics is this type of thing. Bohmian mechanics says that there can be superluminal causation. And there are also some proposals of superdeterministic explanations out there. But apart from being in tension with our intuitions that come from relativity, these types of causal explanations, they have another problem, which is the structure itself does not explain why we observe these independencies. So they do not explain why in the lab we never observed signal faster than light. You can say, like, if my causal structure was like this, and X could actually influence B, why in the lab I've never observed signaling between X and B? It is possible to have that, but only if you make a very specific choice of the parameters here. So you need to choose the parameters of this causal model very specifically, such that even if there is causation outside of the light cone, there is no signaling outside of the light cone. And in particular, the causal structure by itself will not explain to you why you cannot have signaling outside of the light cone. If we adopt those types of causal explanations, we say that they are fine-tuned. So in this paper, it was proven that not only these three, but every modification that you can make to a DAG to explain the quantum predictions in the Bell scenario is fine-tuned. All right, so then what is a solution? Another solution that is that the quantum causal models community approached to this problem is to change the way that causality works. So now we're going to keep the structure of the Bell DAG, but we're going to completely change the way that causality works. So we're being very conservative on the structure, but very radical on what these elements mean. So now instead of having the latent nodes being associated with just classical random variables. I'm going to have the latent nodes being associated with more exotic systems, such as quantum systems, or even more exotic generalized probabilistic theories, which are theories that can even go beyond quantum. And then we're going to call them GPTs. All right. But now I'm going to tell you that this is a good solution to the Bell's theorem. But there is another no-go theorem to which this solution also fails. And it is the first part of my title, which is, the extended Wigner-Friend scenarios. And I'm going to talk about one specific extended Wigner-Friend scenario, which is called the local friendliness no-go theorem. And we're going to see changing from classical causal modeling to non-classical causal modeling does not help in this case. And actually, the challenge is much stronger than the challenge that just Bell's theorem already posed. OK, so first I'm going to explain the scenario. Here, same thing as before. You have Bob in one side, and then he shares half of a system with Charlie. Bob has measurement choice Y, measurement outcome B. Charlie does not have any measurement choice, so he's always going to perform the same measurement on his half of the system. And his outcome is C. And Bob and Charlie and Alice are space-like separated. And then here you have Alice, who is a super observer. If you are familiar with the Wigner's friend scenario, it's like Charlie's the friend and Alice is Wigner. So Alice is like a super observer. She has access to Charlie and his system. And when she also has a measurement choice x, when x is 0, she's just going to open this box and ask Charlie, Charlie, what outcome did you get? And then she's going to copy it. So whenever x is 0, her outcome is just copying c. When x is 1, 2, other values, she's going to do something different. I'm not going to specify what. As of now, it's just like Bob and Charlie, that they do some other measurement. OK. So now let's put the same kind of assumptions that we had before, the same kind of causal assumptions. Since they are space-like separated, I'm going to assume there is no causation outside of the light cone. And I'm going to assume that the measurement choices x and y are free. What is the most general causal structure that I can think that obeys these causal assumptions? It's something like that. I'm going to call this LF DAG for local friendliness. So in this DAG, as you can see, I have no arrow between y and a or x and b, so I'm still obeying those assumptions. X and y are still freely chosen, so that's OK. Here is c's measurement outcome. And I have a very powerful common cause here, that it's not only a common cause of a, b, c, but it's also a non-classical common cause. So here I'm going to allow any system to be here to explain my distributions that I observe. It's not only like in Bell's theorem that I have to assume it's a classical random variable here. I'm going to assume it could be a quantum system or any other more generic GPT. OK, then now what are the causal compatibility inequalities, or more generally, the causal compatibility constraints of this causal structure? Oh, sorry, just L can represent any GPT system. The distributions over a, b, x, y, so for, we're just going to look at the distributions over a, b, x, y, that are marginals of a more general distribution over a, b, c, x, y, such that this more general a, b, c, x, y is GPT compatible with the LF DAG, so can be explained by this DAG, and respects that constraint that whenever x is 0, Alice just copies Charlie's outcome. It's just a simple constraint that comes from the experiment. So all the distributions, they're marginals of an ABCXY that respects these two things. They need to obey those two things. The first two are just no signaling, like we had before, cannot send signals faster than light. And the third one are a set of inequalities that are called LF inequalities. These are different than the Bell inequalities. Now, what is the important thing here? There is a quantum protocol that can violate the local friendliness inequalities. This quantum protocol has already been shown in previous references. So it works more or less like this. Imagine now that we're going to assume that quantum mechanics can explain everything, including observers. So now we're going to assume that not only is Charlie's system, but also Charlie himself can be explained by quantum mechanics. And in particular, if you assume that, in quantum mechanics, closed systems, they evolve as unitaries. So from the point of view of Charlie, he made a measurement on the system. But from the point of view of Alice, who's outside of the box, it's just a unitary evolution that happened there, and that made Charlie himself become entangled with his system. So the quantum protocol that we're going to do to violate DLF inequalities, it's like this. When x is 0, Alice just copies Charlie, like we said before. But when x is different than 0, oh, I said 1, but actually other values as well, she's going to perform the inverse unitary. Because since from her point of view, his measurement wasn't unitary, it is reversible. So she's going to reverse the whole thing, thus erasing Charlie's memory. So the value of z is going to be erased. And the system that Charlie measured is going to go back to what it was before his measurement. And then Alice is going to steal his system and measure it herself according to whatever measurement she wants to make. So if you have a very crazy protocol like that, assuming that quantum mechanics can explain even observers, then it is possible to violate the local friendliness inequalities. Of course, there has been no experiment performed on this no-go theorem yet, because we still don't know how to reverse humans. But there are some proposals on using, like, if one day we have human-level artificial intelligence, and then we give them a status as observer just like we are, because it's an important assumption that Charlie is an observer, so Charlie really observed something before being reversed. So there are other papers discussing how such an experiment would go. But yeah, there is this quantum protocol, and as we saw, our local friendliness, our left DAG, does not explain this predictions, because it does not explain the violation of local friendliness inequalities. So if you compare the Bell DAG and the local friendliness DAG, it is immediately very easy to see why the local friendliness no-go theorem is a stronger no-go theorem than the Bell no-go theorem. Because for Bell, if we change the latent common cause from a classical system to a quantum or GPT system, this solves the problem. For local friendliness, that does not solve the problem. So it's a stronger no-go theorem. What we did in our result was actually introducing this language of causal modeling and DAGs to talk about the local friendliness no-go theorem. Okay, and now the same thing as for Bell, we could say, okay, this causal structure does not explain the predictions, but maybe there are others that explain the predictions, right? And in fact, there are. Like, you could add more arrows, and then you're going to explain the violation of local friendliness inequalities. But first, you have the same problems as before. They have to assume either that there's causation outside of the light cone, or that choices are not free. But even if you're okay with that, you say, I don't care about these assumptions. We proved, analogous to this other paper that had proved it for Bell, we proved that all of such modifications, not only these three, but all of them that you can think, they're going to be fine-tuned. So they are not going to explain the independencies that you observe. Just a small caveat here, these two independencies are just no signaling, like we had in the case of Bell. This third independence, it seems like it's a little bit more subtle to verify. Oh my God, okay. It's fine, I'm almost there. It's a little bit more subtle to verify, because the value of C is not accessible in the end of the experiment, right? Because we had that whole protocol where Alice reversed Charlie and erased his memory. But in this work, we also proposed a verification protocol. So in fact, we say that this independence is also empirically verifiable. All right. So that's it. We proved that all of those modifications inside the most general framework that we can think of for causal explanations, they both, to explain the predictions, they both violate our intuitions about causality, about like relativistic causality, and they are all fine-tuned. So this means that the quantum GPT causal modeling framework is not suited to explain the violations of local friendliness inequalities, even if it was suited to explain violation of Bell inequalities. So yeah, I think that's it.